reading today comes from 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 9 to 22. Do your best to come to me quickly, for Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia and Titus to Dalmatia. Only Luke is with me. Get Mark and bring him with you, because he's helpful to me in my ministry. I sent Tychicus to Ephesus, and when you come, bring the cloak that I left with Carpus and Troas, and my scrolls, especially the parchments. Alexander the metalworker did me a great deal of harm. The Lord will repay him for what he has done. You too should be on your guard against him, because he is strongly opposed to our message. At my first defence, no one came to my support, but everyone deserted me. May it not be held against them, but the Lord stood at my side and gave me my strength, so that through the messenger, message might be fully proclaimed and all the Gentiles might hear it. And I was delivered from the lion's mouth. The Lord will rescue me from every evil attack and will bring me safely to his heavenly kingdom. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen. Greet Priscilla and Aquila and the household of Onesiphorus, and Erastus stayed in Corinth, and I left Trophimus ill in Miletus. Do your best to get there before winter. Eubulus greets you, and so do Pudens, Linus, Claudia, and all the brothers and sisters. Lord be with your spirit. Grace be with you all.
Well, it's a real joy to be with you. I'm just going to put my timer on so I stop at the right point. It's always great to come to Pomprennau, Highfields. Lots of old friends from kind of CU days. So it's always a total joy and see Matt and Kath and the kids growing. Tom is nearly taller than his dad, which is amazing. So we're loving that. But it's great to come and to see friends and to be together. And today I want to talk about friendship from the end of 2 Timothy. I think very often when we read the epistles, we get to the end and we kind of skip them. Now, I'm the kind of guy that when I read a book, I'm obsessed with footnotes. I like the kind of endorsements at the start. I love all those bits. And I think sometimes with the end of the epistles in the New Testament, when we skip through them, I think we miss some real gold. And I think this last section of 2 Timothy, which is Paul's last ever letter, I think is incredibly encouraging and helpful for us as Christians. So if you've got a Bible, please turn to 2 Timothy chapter 4. And we're going to look at verse 9 to 22. I'll be skipping around in the passage, so I'll keep telling you where we're going. But as you're turning to 2 Timothy chapter 4, let me just share three stories. The names have been changed, but you might recognise some of these stories. Jane had been a Christian for 25 years. When she married her husband, he was a Christian. They wanted to serve the Lord together, getting secular work, being a part of the local church. They wanted to have children and bring them up in the church. But now, 25 years in, Jane's husband has left the church, has left the faith, and wants nothing to do with it. Frank has been a part of a prayer triplet for the last 5 years, a real band of brothers. But now one of the prayer partners has to move due to a new job and relocation, and the other prayer partner is about to go on the mission field. And so this prayer triplet that has been such an important part of his life for the last 5 years has come to an end. And he is confused and he is hurt. Jessica is a sixth form student and is part of the school Christian Union. Her and some friends were in a science class one day and the teacher started to mock Christians for believing the Bible. Jessica was singled out and the teacher started to belittle her. But her Christian friends didn't stand up for her. They just kept quiet. I wonder, have you ever been let down by a Christian friend? Perhaps deep wounds of a Christian friend who's left the faith? Or hurt when you haven't been sinned against, it's just the loss of a good friend? Or maybe you've been left alone in the workplace or in your school gate when you're picking up the kids and you feel like the only Christian. Well, let me tell you this morning, if you've experienced any of those things, those are common experiences. Gossip and slander, broken promises, unforgiveness, being left out. They're all experiences in the local church. And what amazes me with 2 Timothy is this is Paul's last ever letter. And I think we all want to end at the kind of start of chapter 4. Because the last half of chapter 4, the last thing Paul ever writes is all about relational nightmares. Don't you want it to be getting better for Paul?
Did you want to think, well, after all those years in ministry, Paul, all your friendships were sorted, all your ministry partnerships were fine, all the churches were great? No, as he comes to the end, it was a mess. And as Christians, we need to be honest about this, and we need to admit it so that we can face it and we can deal with it. Because actually, when you read through the New Testament in particular and the epistles, they are nearly all written into relationship nightmares. Very often a Christian will say this, I'd love to be in a New Testament church. I wouldn't. I wouldn't have gone to Corinth Evangelical Church, no way. I mean, Galatians, what's going on in the churches there? When you look at these kind of letters, Philippians, two retired missionary ladies. That's why Philippians is written, because there's two retired missionary ladies fighting. You can imagine Philippians being read in church like this, and the little kids would have been sitting there before Sunday school, and they would have been going, I think Paul's talking about those ladies fighting. Parents be, shh, they're not. No, he's not. He wouldn't. Yes, he would. You can imagine. And so we need to understand this. So let's have a look and walk through. And let me give you three thoughts on gospel friendship, what it means to be a Christian friend. Here's the first thing I want to tell you this morning. Gospel friendship is hard. Gospel friendship is hard. And it's hard for a number of reasons. Firstly, there are different types of people in gospel friendships. Have a look just down to verse 19 with me towards the end. And some of these names, let's unpack them a bit. You've got Priscilla and Aquila, and then you've got the household of Onesiphorus. Verse 20, you've got Erastus, who stayed in Corinth, and you've got Trophimus, who is ill. You've got other names, Eubulus, Pudens, Linus, Claudia, all these different names, and Paul himself. And when you go through the names, and if you read through the New Testament, this is what you'll find. Some of those names are Jewish names, and some of them are Gentile names. And when you read through the New Testament, one of the things you find is one of the hardest things for the early church was the Jewish and Gentile cultures coming together. Do you remember in Acts 6 and the serving of the tables for the widows? There were these issues. And that's one of the things of gospel friendship, is because we're different, what brings us together shouldn't be our culture, it shouldn't be our nationality, it should be Christ. But this causes tensions. Even Paul himself with Peter had huge issues. Peter himself at times was kind of xenophobic, wasn't he? He wanted to do his own thing with his own people. And so Paul had to go and kind of confront him to his face. The church is full of different nationalities and cultures. But it's not just kind of cultures, it's socioeconomic. When you go through the list and look at it, you get Paul, who was a tent maker. You get other people like Erastus, who we think was a city official. We think he had a really good job. And when you read through the New Testament again, you get issues of the rich and the poor. You get the rich who get the front seats, who get to the communion first. You get the poor who are probably the slaves that the people in the church are employing and saying, can you finish off working so I can get to church first and have communion? And then they're coming in at the end. Church is hard when there are all these differences. You know, friendship in the world isn't based on those friendships, is it? Sometimes you're in a Christian conference or in a Christian church and you look around and you think, if I wasn't a Christian, I wouldn't be here with these people. Do you ever get that feeling? Maybe not in Highfields Pomprenna, I don't know. But you just look around. In my church, I look around and I just think, how have I ended up in a group of friends with these people? We are so different. I'm from West Wales. Okay, Abergavenny is West England. It is not East Wales. It's West England. One of the first days we were living in Abergavenny, me and my boys were walking through, and at that point we had strong Welsh accents. I know you can't believe that now, but we had strong Welsh accents. And this guy walked up to me and my boys and said, are you from around here? And we were like, well, we've just moved in. He goes, oh, you're very Welshy, aren't you? I mean, it's just bizarre. And I look, and there I am, my kind of Welsh, you know, working class chip on my shoulder from West Wales, and my fellow elders are judges, and, you know, and I just think, what am I doing with these guys? But it's the gospel that brings us together. But that makes it hard. You see, friendship in the world is based on what C.S. Lewis calls the kind of what you two factor. That's how we make friends, isn't it? Matt just said, I've come back from holidays. I flew in a few hours ago, and we were on holidays, and we were making friends. And I'll be honest, The people on holidays I made friends with were people from Cardiff. There were people from kind of all over the place. And then every time I met someone from Cardiff or Wales, well, we were like, we've been friends for years. You're from Cardiff? Oh, I'm Welsh as well. And there was a guy, he was born just 5 miles from my house, and it was brilliant. We just, what, you two? You're Welsh. And we all kind of came together and looked at everybody else kind of unsurely. And C.S. Lewis says that's where friendship comes from. What, you two? But we need to understand that for us as Christians, are what you two needs to be Christ. Not where you're from or who you are. It needs to be Christ. That's what makes us friends. And there is something about that. On holidays last week, I don't think we couldn't find any other Christians. But I know that if we had found another Christian, that what you two would have been even more powerful than being Welsh and coming from Cardiff. There would have been something amazing. One of the joys in Christian ministry is traveling around the world and going to different places. And I remember once being in India talking to a pastor from Africa, and it was as if we were friends for life because we were family. Our what you two was the gospel, it was Christ. And that's one of the reasons why church is hard. It's because we're so different. And our culture and our values is the water we swim in. It's the air we breathe. And so when we come together as churches, we don't realize that we've got these differences. We don't realize that some of the social things and cultural things we do annoy and wind up other people. Some of the things that we think are Christian values, other people think are worldly values. Have you ever noticed that? It's amazing. At my stage of life, it's all about parenting. I still don't understand parenting. I've got a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old and a kind of minus 3 months kind of on the way baby coming. And sometimes I'm talking to other people and I realize that some of what I think are Christian values are just cultural values. And we can offend each other in the options we take about schooling or not putting in school or which school and how we do it. And it's hard in church. I wonder what it is for you that winds you up about other Christians in Pomprennai. What is it that you think, oh, that can't be Christian? But actually, it's just cultural. We need to understand that really for us, what brings us together is Christ. And that is amazing, as we're going to see, but it does bring a whole host of problems. It does mean that friendship is hard. And so what we tend to do in churches then is we tend to go into smaller groups. That's what we tend to do. We tend maybe to have friendships that are based on age groups or on stages of life or on certain professions. And so that's what we tend to do. We try to create these kind of cliques, I guess. Now, this has got nothing to do with anything Matt has told me. He hasn't asked me to preach on this, so can I just say that completely? I would say this in any church and in every church, because in any and every church I've ever been in, I've ended up in a clique. What is a clique in a church? Have you ever wondered that? Is your house group a clique? You know, is your serving group a clique? I always think there's three kind of marks of a clique in a church. The first thing is this, the group of friends is closed. Once a group of friends in church becomes closed and you're not willing for anybody else to join in, I think there's danger signs. The second thing is that group of friends is clone-like. So you all buy your clothes from the same place, be it Bowdoin or H&M, whichever it is. Men are going, I don't understand that. I don't know, my wife wrote that bit for me. But you become clone-like. And the other thing I think is this, it becomes comfortable. Your friendship is comfortable. I think if your friendship group in church at the moment is closed, clone-like and comfortable, could I suggest perhaps you're in a clique? And that doesn't really reflect the end of 2 Timothy 4. Of different people from different backgrounds, of different cultures, coming together and saying that what you two is Christ and nothing else. And really, that's what marks us out in society. People should look at our churches and see differences and go, why are they friends? What have they got in common? And you're able to say, well, it's Christ. And so gospel friendship is hard because we are so different. But as well, gospel friendship is hard because there are difficult situations in gospel friendships. Our friendships and our lives are as difficult as the lives and friendships of our non-Christian friends. Let me give you a couple of examples. Have a look at verse 20. Verse 20, it says this, do your best to get you before winter. Eusias greets you, and so do Prudence. And so what does he want? He wants him to get there before winter. Where's Paul? Paul is imprisoned. The whole point of this letter, really, is Paul writing to Timothy wanting to see him. So in verse 4 of chapter 1, he says this, "Recalling your tears, I long to see you, so that I may be filled with your joy." In fact, Paul has given him a bit of a shopping list. Can you get my coat? Can you get my scrolls? In a day when there was no kind of easy jet or nice easy options for travelling, this was risky stuff, and it was hard. But it's not just that. There's lots of other things that are going on as well. Did you notice Trophimus? He was ill. You know, within Christian life, people get ill and friendships are difficult. I wonder sometimes as Christians how open we are to that. Illness here, I'm assuming, is physical, we think. But there's other types of illnesses within the church, isn't there? There's emotional illnesses. There's psychological illnesses. And that happens in the life of the church. And that can make gospel friendship very hard. Because generally in friendship, if I'm honest, I want people to bring benefit to me. Life is busy. I've got work, I've got kids, I've got to keep on top of the mortgage. You know, there's all these different pressures in my life. And very often I can look at friends as someone who, well, what can you do for me? How can you help me? But actually, we need to realize that within friendship, we need to help one another even when we're ill in lots of different ways. I read this week a great book. It's come out a couple of months ago. Mark Meynell writes amazing books. He wrote the book Cross-Examined, and he's just written a book called When Darkness Seems My Closest Friend, which is Mark Meynell, who works for the Langham kind of International Trust, used to be in All Souls, I think, in London. And he's written a book about his journey of depression, and quoting Psalm 88, when darkness seems my closest friend. And really, he shares his story of depression and how that affects him in ministry. And the book is incredibly helpful because it's being honest about these struggles, and he's talking about how some people just can't handle it, just don't want anything to do with him, whereas other people are willing to come into what he calls the cave. That's how he explains his depression. It's like living in a cave, just feeling dark and alone. And he says, sometimes there are certain friends who are willing to step into the cave with me. And here we see there's illnesses and difficult situations. And as Christians, we need to realize that that is going to happen and help each other. But it's not just illnesses. There's some real tough things going on here. Have a look at verse 14 and 15 and meet Alexander. Alexander the metal worker did me a great deal of harm. The Lord will repay him for what he has done. So Paul is writing, look, Timothy, come and be with me. And then he's saying, but by the way, Alexander is on the warpath. He's out to get me. This is one of the things about Christian friendship is sometimes Christians can be attacked. Christians can be persecuted, and they definitely are in other parts of the world. But even we in this country can be attacked. And here is what's happening here is guilt by association. So have a look, verse 15. You too should be on your guard against him, because he strongly opposed our message. This is one of the really hard things of life as a Christian, is our friends could be attacked. This is why I shared the story about Jessica, the sixth form student. Perhaps you've known that. When you've got flack for being a Christian, some of you perhaps are in professions at the moment where there are decisions you have to make, where maybe the government is saying you have to do that, or the organisation is saying you have to do that, and you're going, but I can't do that. And that is hard, to stand up and to say, yeah, I know I'm meant to do it, but I, in full conscience, cannot do it. And sometimes people then will be singled out. Perhaps you've had that, or you're having that at the moment, where people within your workplace, they're attacking you now. We're living in an age now, particularly kind of the iGen generation coming up. It's really fascinating, isn't it? They're all in university. If you're in university, I'm sure you're not like this. But they want to have safe spaces. And I love that idea. I think that's wonderful. But the big thing now is, look, you know, you can't say anything that I disagree with. You can't offend me. I was reading a report this week of a person who made a complaint because someone quoted 1 Corinthians 13. Now, why would 1 Corinthians 13 offend you? Because the person felt bad about not loving other people. And so it complained to the university, how dare this person come in and make me feel guilty for not loving other people. And we're kind of living more and more in that world. But actually, we need to realize that we are going to be attacked for our faith more and more. as we step more and more out of line with what is now mainstream belief. And it's huge. I don't want to become an alarmist, kind of saying extreme things, but I do think over the next 5 to 10 years as Christians, in the workplace, I think more and more we will realise that some of the views we hold, even if we don't publicly share them, when people realise our views, we will be accused of bullying, bigotry, we will be accused of homophobia and many different things. I think it's going to be tough. And here's the question. What are you going to do? Are you going to stand? And if you do stand, is anybody going to stand with you? I think those are the big questions we need to be asking at the moment. Are we going to stand with one another? So if a colleague puts their head above the parapet in the workplace, will you stand by them? It's huge. You see, there are people out to do harm. Here is Alexander the metal worker. We're not quite sure who he is. We're pretty sure he might have been one of the Jews, kind of that tried to speak out in Acts. He may be someone who has been excommunicated from the church. We don't know. He could be causing problems in the trial for Paul. We don't quite know who he is, and I think sometimes that's helpful. But he is going for them. I wonder, have you ever had that? I've had that. Let me just share briefly two men. One in Ammanford. He was a Christian leader. He'd done many amazing things for the gospel and then denied the gospel, didn't want anything to do with the gospel, but his wife still did. And so he made sure he poisoned the minds of his children against the gospel. He made it hard, incredibly hard, for his wife to come to church every week. It was a horrendous experience for her. Whenever church or Christianity came up on the TV, he just had a flying tirade at his wife. And any time he met someone from the church, he just ran the church down. He just wanted to ruin us. I remember that kind of feeling of thinking, man, there is a guy here who, if he could, he would ruin me. And I thought that was just an Ammanford thing, West Walian. And then I go to Abergavenny, and they're posh, and they're educated. They're not like us in West Wales. And guess what? Another guy. Exactly the same story. In fact, this guy, this is a true story, bought up every domain linked to our church and took out Google Ads and built loads of websites calling us witches and false teachers and all of this great stuff. So that for 8 months, if you ever Googled for a church in Abergavenny or our church or my name, a website came up saying I was a false teacher and a witch. And whilst I can kind of say with a smile now, for those 8 months, it was horrendous. The amount of Christian friends who were phoning me and saying, John, I've just tried to find this church you've gone to, and they're saying you're doing this and you're doing that. And he would want to literally stop us. He would do anything to get at us. People will attack us as Christians. The question is, will you stand, and will you stand with those who are being attacked? Because gospel friendship is hard. But there's another reason gospel friendship is hard. It's because people in gospel friendships will leave you. For those of you who have been a Christian for a long time, I think this is the hardest. Christians will leave you. Have a look at verse 9 and 10. It's interesting. He says to Timothy, look, do your best to come to me quickly, and then you have the four. Why? For, verse 10, Demas, because he loved the world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Do you know a Demas? Do you know someone who loved you, who served with you, who cared with you? Perhaps you taught Sunday school with them. Perhaps you were an elder with them. Perhaps you used to meet in a prayer breakfast with them. And one day they were a Christian, and the next day they weren't. When I read verse 10, I really want to know, what is in Thessalonica? What is it that has made him leave the faith? He says he loves this world. His heart has slowly been turned away from the Lord to the degree by which he now loves the world. And because of that, he's gone to Thessalonica. And notice this. He loves the world, so he's going away from the Lord. But look at verse 10 halfway through. He says, Paul says, and has deserted me. That's the thing, you see, when people lose their faith and walk away, it hurts us personally. They desert us. And it's so hard. I wonder, what was it in Thessalonica? Was it success? Was it sex? Was it middle-class ease? What was it that made him walk away and desert Paul? I think at each stage of life there is that temptation, isn't there? To love the world. I think generally as churches we often think of uni and the kind of teenagers. That's the big panic for me as a parent. What am I going to do when my boys become teenagers? Can't control them now. They're not even in double digits. Well, what am I going to do? How do I know they're going to become Christians? How do I know they're going to stay? It's a horrendous kind of feeling. And those of you who are parenting teenagers, I pray for you. And it's wonderful. I'm dreading it. But I look at it, and we all think it's all about the teenage years and the uni years. That's when people from Christian homes fall away. And there is an element of truth in that. But I also find in the 20s, the ones who stood firm in the sixth form, who stood firm in the uni, who thought they were really strong Christians and were going well, I think actually the greater temptation comes in the 20s. What job do you take? Where do you live? Who do you marry? Those are the big temptations. Those are the big decisions, the decisions that either help you go on in the faith or slowly take you away from the faith. And I don't think it's just the 20s just to depress you. I think it's the 30s. I think people get through the 20s and think, well, I married a Christian, I got a job, and I'm serving in the church. It's all great. And you're all happy with the lifestyle you've chosen, decided to live in a certain part of Cardiff because that's the Christian thing to do, and you've decided to give your time to the church because that's the Christian thing to do. And in your 30s, the gap starts to widen. And you look at the people you're working with and the people who earn the same amount as you, and they've got a lot more than you. And you start to think, hold on. We're doing the same job, but they've got everything that's better than me. Why is that? It's because I'm tithing, and I'm going to church, and I've made these gospel decisions. And in your 30s, it's so hard then, isn't it? To stick to your guns, to not want to keep up with the Joneses. And here's the thing, I'm 42 or 43, I can't remember. It's best not to remember. Happens in your 40s as well. So I'll be honest, last week on holidays, I was sitting by the pool talking to people and listening to their lifestyles and thinking, I'd like that. I want that. It's hard, isn't it? The love and the allure of the world is a constant. And so it's so easy to see Christians going as a Demas, who just loved the world and walk away. Whether he was saved or not, I don't know. But he walked away and he deserted Paul. Look, other people are sent out as well. Verse 10, halfway through. Cretans has gone to Galatia and Titus to Dalmatia. Paul has actually sent them on active mission. And that is hard. People who go on to the mission field, who go and serve in other churches. Matt referred to the kind of days when it was me, Matt and Sam, and it was great. It was good banter. We had someone to pick on, and we loved that. But we loved it. It was really good and it was hard. Matt came to Cardiff and then I've gone to Abergavenny. Sam is still in Ammanford. And that's hard in ministry, isn't it? Even though we rejoiced when Matt came to Cardiff, even though Ammanford rejoiced when I went to Abergavenny, they were glad to get rid of me. It really is hard. And Christians leave us. But here's the saddest verse of all. Verse 16, he really was left. It says this, verse 16, at my first offence, no one came to my support. But everyone deserted me. Some people call this Paul's Gethsemane, when he was left alone. Perhaps as a Christian you've known this for a period of time. We have brothers and sisters around the world actually who know this in an extremely powerful, important way at the moment. Perhaps even here in the midst of church you feel left alone. You feel like no one understands, that no one has realized what you're going through, and no one has cared for you. And that is one of the hardest things to go through as a Christian. But you need to understand that not only is gospel friendship hard, gospel friendship is hardy, and we can get through these. Let me just show you very quickly. Have a look at verse 11 here. There's two interesting names here. Verse 11, only Luke is with me, and then get Mark and bring him with you, because he's helpful to me in my ministry. Now, I love these two names. The first reason I love is Luke. He says, Luke is with me. But in verse 16, Luke was not with him. Did you notice that? At my first offence, no one came to my support. Here's my question. Where was Luke in verse 16? If Luke is with him, where was Luke in verse 16 when he needed him? You see, some people left him because they went on to the mission field. Some people left him because they left the faith. Some people were ill and couldn't support him. Some people just lived in different places. But Luke, it seems, let him down for no apparent reason. That's amazing, isn't it? That someone can let you down as a Christian without even sinning. That's, I think, the complex issue sometimes. Sometimes we expect a Christian to be there, and they're just not. Where was Luke? Where was Luke? Or what about the next guy, Mark? We know him as John Mark. Do you remember John Mark? I love the fact that John Mark comes in the end of 2 Timothy 4. I would love this passage for the rest of my life if it was just for this mention of John Mark. John Mark caused the first schism in the history of the church. First church split is down to John Mark. He'd gone onto the mission field with Paul and with Barnabas. He'd gone with them, and he'd really caused a real ruckus. He couldn't handle it. He did a bit of a Demas. He just wanted to run away. Ministry was too hard. And so he ran away. And then he goes, oh, but I still want to do ministry. And so Barnabas goes, yay, I like to encourage people. Come on, Paul, let's take him back. And Paul goes, no, can't have people like him on the field with me. I don't want anything to do with him. And so actually they split and they go their own ways. So John Mark causes the first church split in history. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? And what I love is here, Paul's last ever words, get Mark, bring him with you, because he's helpful to me in my ministry. You've got to understand that gospel friendship is hardy. We can get through things. We can have people who let us down, like Luke, for no apparent reason. We can have people who let us down, like John Mark, and we can still be friends. We can have that kind of Onesimus experience in Philemon. Do you remember? He was useless, but now he's useful. I think that is a wonderful thing in the church, where friendships have gone through tough times, where we've let each other down, but the friendship has come through. Vaughan Roberts, in his little book on friendship, says this: all relationships between sinful human beings are bound to experience tension at times. The closer the friendship, the deeper the pain that is likely to be felt when one believes they have been let down or betrayed by the other. If we are at fault ourselves, even if only in part, we should be quick to apologize and do all we can to put things right. I wonder, are your friendships hardy? Perhaps someone has let you down and they did it on purpose. Can you forgive them? Perhaps someone has let you down and they didn't realize they let you down. They just weren't there. How many times has that happened? How many times has someone taken their life and people in the media are saying, if only we'd known, if only we'd known? Can we forgive one another and let one another love each other? Gospel friendship can be hardy. And the reason is, gospel friendship is heavenly. Here's the last point. You see, I love verse 17 and verse 18. In verse 16, he says, look, at my first defense, no one came to my support. And this is where we're going to understand how Paul can take these really difficult friendships, these hard friendships, and they can become so hardy. Now we're going to find the power. Let me just quickly show you this. He says, verse 16, no one stood at my side. Everybody deserted me. And this is what he said, may it not be held against them. I hate that verse. Why can't he treat his friends like he did with Alexander the metal worker? That's what I want to do. Have a look at verse 14. Let's be honest. We all want to be able to say this about people that let us down. Alexander the metal worker did me a great deal of harm. The Lord will repay him for what he's done. I want to say that to every Christian who's ever let me down. They let me down. They weren't there. The Lord will repay them. But he doesn't say that. He says that for those who persecute the gospel. But to friends who let him down, may it not be held against them. Brothers, sisters, are you holding something against someone? I think we like to cutch hurts. We like to cuddle them. Some of us are defined by our hurts, by Christians failing us and letting us down. We need to have a strong doctrine of indwelling sin. We need to understand that we are but men. That's what Matthew Henry says. Men are men. People are people. And we need to realize, do you know what? Just as people let me down, I let other people down. And we need to be able to say with Paul, may it not be held against them. And this is why he can say it, verse 17. He said, "But the Lord stood at my side and gave me strength, so that through me the message might be fully proclaimed and all the Gentiles might hear it." You see, what did Paul know? Paul knew that even if everybody let him down, whether they meant to or not, the Lord never let him down. All of his human friendships were based on his heavenly friendship. Because he had a friend in Christ, he could handle the other friends letting him down. You need to understand that. And it was shared in the book, in the worship, wasn't it? When we put our friends on a pedestal and say, "You are my friend. You will care for me. You will be with me. You will walk with me." When you say that to a friend and put them up on a pedestal, you've put them up on the pedestal to pull them back down again. If anybody ever falls off a pedestal in friendship, you're the one that put them on the pedestal. We need to put Christ on a higher pedestal and say, "You are my friend. You will never leave me. You will never forsake me." And so all of these other friends then, they're important, but you hold on to Christ first and foremost. We need to trust in him. This is what we need to understand. There will be times in the workplace where no other Christian stands up for you. You may be in a workplace where there is no other Christians, but the Lord is by your side. You may be in a family where you are the only Christian or the only one going on in the Lord, but the Lord will stand by your side. You may be the only Christian in the sixth form or in the uni course, but the Lord will stand by your side. Now here's the danger where you go with this. If Christ is my friend and all the other friends let me down, I won't hold it against them because I don't need them. That's not what Paul is doing. Why is Paul writing to Timothy? He's writing to Timothy, to tell Timothy to come to him. Fascinating, isn't it? Even though he rests his friendship in Christ, he still loves his human friendships. Because when they're based on Christ, you can love and trust and rest with your friends, but you can do it in a way that says, even though you've let me down, may it not be held against you. Because they are not your God. They are not your ultimate hope. So we don't say, "Well, Christians let me down, so I'm just not going to be friends with Christians." That's the temptation, isn't it? Guard your heart. Go into your little cave. Don't come too close. We'll have a nice Sunday morning. "How are you doing?" "I'm doing fine. But the Lord is with me. I don't need anybody." It's not good for man to be alone. No man is an island. We can't be on our own. God created us from community, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, to be community. But what he wants to do is give us stability in that community by being our ultimate friend, by living with us. Brothers and sisters, are you finding friendship hard? Have you been let down? Have you been hurt? Expect it. But the friendship needs to be hardy. Like Luke, you need to be able to say, "I know you weren't there. I don't know why, but may the Lord not hold it against you." We need to be like Paul with John Mark and say, "Do you know what? You messed up, you caused pain, but now you are useful to me." And we need to realize that it's our heavenly friendship with Christ that we trust in, and that helps us to love others, to live with them, and to forgive them, and walk together. Let's pray.